if we miss somebody, we may feel lonely. Mm-hmm. But the profound loneliness is we have no one to miss. We don't miss anybody.
Hi, I'm Tobias Haberkorn. You're listening to Airlift from Berlin Review. Today's guest is someone who many people in the West may not know, but who is one of the most influential thinkers alive in China, especially for young people. Biao Qiang is an anthropologist born in Wenzhou, a city in southeastern China. He spent years studying migrant workers in Beijing before teaching at Oxford. He now directs the Max Planck Institute for Social Anthropology in Halle, Germany. Over the last decade, Biao's ideas have not only resonated within academia, but have also reached a whole generation of young people who use his terms to describe their experiences of living in the modern world. In this conversation, my co-host Lauren Euler spoke with him about something that has become a universal and growing problem: loneliness. They talk about why loneliness has been growing among the working class and how a generation of young people in China are resisting the conditions that drive loneliness today. Towards the end of the conversation, they also discuss an article that Biao recently co-authored for Berlin Review on lonely deaths in Germany and Japan and the people responsible for cleaning up the aftermath. Here's Lauren Euler talking with Biao Qiang.
Do you feel like people are lonelier than before?
Oh, in general, I think so.
Yeah.
And it's not only in China, but also globally. And the reasons are multiple. But mm-hmm. the one thing I would like to emphasize is that we witness that some groups whom we normally thought are not so lonely, like young people, like laboring class, working class people, now also experience loneliness. Because before we thought loneliness is somehow for people very educated, artists and philosophers. But now it is become widespread. And then you have people who should have many friends, and teenagers and young adults, and also people working in factories, working in farms, because it's we saw this collective form of work. You know, you meet the people all the time, you make things together. So you may have many other type of problems or hardship, but probably loneliness is not in the list, but now it is. Yeah. So therefore, there's a widespread of loneliness.
What has happened over the last however many years that this, you know, what about society is making the middle class more isolated, making students more isolated? What's happening?
I think probably there's three reasons.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's start with what happened the most recent, which of course has to do with information technology and especially now AI. And the trick of AI is to make you feel connected superficially while you don't have genuine communication and the relationship with any persons, right? So therefore, you constantly, always feel your emotional need is satisfied. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you don't have the desire, you don't see the need to go out, to make effort, to invest time and energy to make friends. And this is, I think, the most important reason why young adults and teenager students feel isolated and can live in isolation for a long time without noticing there's anything wrong. So as a result, they end up in quite a deep and profound sense of loneliness, which manifests itself as depression or sometimes identification with some quite extreme fanatic ideas and etc. So that is number one. Second reason, I think, is what we call this new liberal ideology, which dominated the world after 1990s, is what make middle class and working class also more lonely. Why? The idea is that, okay, you know, you are your own masters and you can do anything as long as you work hard. And other people, you know, you can work with them, but fundamentally they're your competitors. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So everyone should chart their own way and move forward. Don't waste time, don't waste energy, and maximize your own benefit. And treat other people as useful or convenient collaborators, if suits, otherwise they are competitors. And probably nobody will say that in everyday life, but the feelings, the orientation of life mm-hmm. is so much centered on your own success or survival. And the question of friendship, relations really fade away. And then you feel lonely. I mean, you feel that you, an individual, are really facing the entire world, you know, entire market, entire society, and you have to struggle by yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is very lonely. And the third reason, which for me is very important, related to neoliberalism to some extent, is after 1990s, because of the loss of socialist idea and the loss of labor power, meaning, I mean, labor power, I mean the organized unions and etc., and also because of change of the industry, the demise of Fordism and the rise of post-Fordism as a paradigm, how economic production is organized, working class not only have less opportunities to work collectively in factories or in company, but also they lost sense of pride.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, it seems to me that what you're saying is that, you know, young people, mm-hmm. middle class people, mm-hmm. and also working class people mm-hmm. are being kind of left behind, mm-hmm. right? Or mm-hmm. or kind of lacking language for mm-hmm. their experiences, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of these groups, especially young people, have identified with your work and, you know, come to appreciate some of your concepts, particularly, I think, the one of suspension. Could we talk a little bit about that?
The idea of suspension came to me, I would say. It's not like I invented the concept. Mm-hmm. It is really came to me in 1994. So that's a long history. And 1994 is already, you know, you can say in China, the neoliberal reform started already. I mean, the working class pride is no longer there. So you have lots of rural urban migrants who work very hard in factories, but they don't identify to what they are doing. They feel that is just a very transient moment. So they work very hard in the factory in order to save as quickly as possible in order to move away from what they are doing. Right. Mm-hmm. So they work extremely hard, but they don't identify with what they are doing, have no sense of pride, let alone joy. And then they constantly run into all kinds of problems, problems with their foreman in the workshop, a problem with co-workers in the dormitory, etc. What do? They keep moving, changing jobs. We call the jump ships from one factory to another. And then ask about the future, everyone, many of them say, okay, if I save enough money, I will set up a little shop of my own. So I will become a boss. I'm no longer become a worker. So you look at their life conditions. You know, they work extremely hard, but they keep moving from one factory to another. Yet they don't know when the future will arrive. And what they know is that they can no longer go back mm-hmm. to where they come from. So then the image come to my mind is like the hummingbird. A hummingbird, you flap your wings fanatically, very fast, in order to stay still in the middle of the air. Mm-hmm. And you're worried, if you slow down your wings just a little, you will drop. You will drop. So you sustain yourself by the sense of fear, anxiety, and you work very hard, but you are not sure where you are going to. And then you will look at their life, you know, I see, okay, they suspend lots of basic needs in life, friendship, relaxation, family. So they kind of become very single-minded, just focus on the work. So often, migrant workers demand overtime. Mm-hmm. Demand because overtime, they'll pay a little more than the usual hours, and also they want to maximize their saving. So they suspend the moment, you know, or the moment, what is happening now, is extremely important because they want to use every minute to save more money. Mm-hmm. But this moment itself has no meaning because yeah. every moment is something you want to step on in order to jump to the future.
Right.
Right. Imagine why Chinese economy could develop so fast. Mm-hmm. You have 1 billion people suspend their social need and for the moment, and then, you know, sacrifice the now for the imagined future. Of course, everyone works very hard as the economy will grow. But at the same time, why lots of social problems are left and pushed aside, not resolved, because people don't want to spend the time and energy to confront the social problem here and now. For instance, working relations in the workshop. For instance, the condition of the dormitory, how the food in the canteen, the quality of food in the canteen, how they're managing, etc. People say, okay, you know, I mean, it's all bad, but I should not spend time to be bothered by this because my goal is to save more money and move on.
Yeah.
So therefore, you have the paradox. On one hand, the society appears to be very dynamic, developing very fast. But on the other hand, many social issues are left unsolved.
I thought maybe we could talk too about the concept of involution, mm-hmm. right? Because I don't quite understand the concept, so I was wondering if you could explain it.
Yeah, involution, now we come back to the language question.
Yeah.
And involution is a very unusual word. Mm-hmm. English probably doesn't, I mean, sound very technical. Right?
I know what it means in like general. I mean, but it almost requires like a physical gesture to explain, right? Like you're turning it in on yourself.
Yeah. So, and in Chinese, it's it's more direct. It's a kind of inward rolling.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine yourself rolling mm-hmm. on the floor, but you are not like stretching, you know, you're rolling inside. So you intensify all your effort and, you know, you become burned out, but without any real achievement. Mm-hmm. But yet you cannot free yourself from this situation. A quick example is like in schools. And everyone wants to have a higher score because the system encourages you so or punish you unless you do that. And everyone works very hard in order to improve the score. But since everyone works hard, your ranking is still lagging behind others.
Mm-hmm.
So then you still have to work harder in order to improve your ranking.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know in this process, you are not learning anything. You are just developing your skills for exams and the skills to earning scores. You cannot find a way out of that because the structure is such. If you stop doing that, you will be dropped to the bottom. So that condition is almost impossible, very consuming, in a way, a pointless competition. Is a situation of involution. And the word involution is not only a word to describe an objective condition, a structure out there. And it's quite important is to describe the feeling. You are inside, you hate it, you feel tired, you want to get out, but you don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
That's impossible. You see yourself as a victim of the structure, but also you see yourself are contributing mm-hmm. to the system because you are working hard. You know, you're guided it.
Yes.
So that is why that term, and otherwise is very banal, because you say, you know, any like competition will easily become like that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Chinese context, this word really brings the individual experiences, including very visceral feelings, with a structural condition, with a larger economy, and make people think, why is the structure end up like this? And also let make people think, what should I do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that I think is quite important. Yeah.
Right. You talk about working so hard pointlessly, right? A lot of your concepts are about like staying still, like, you know. Yeah. But I wonder how you think we, and I don't even know what I mean by we, do we mean the government? Do we mean like social services? Like what do we mean like media personalities, you know, public intellectuals? How different values are disseminated mm. because in you know when you read articles in the New York Times about what's happening in China, you often get quotes from government authorities in various kinds, and it almost seems fake or like not the full story
mm.
because the quotes from the government authorities will always be something like, you need to work harder to build the nation. And I wonder if this is convincing to people anymore in China, right? Because of this socialist, you know, history. Or if as the country becomes more and more liberal and more kind of market-based, capitalistic, does working hard for China like even appeal? Like, or because you would never say to an American person, you need to work hard for America anymore. Like that's only like really sort of poor people and sort of people who have nothing would buy that, that narrative, right? So I'm just kind of interested to like what you think, how you think people respond to this at this time, or if this is convincing at all.
Yeah. You may be surprised to hear my response. Actually, it probably works better than we expected.
Really?
Yeah. And there are a couple of reasons. Number one is that the current world situation, the rise of China, and then, you know, technological breakthrough, or just basic, the political system and the social life remain more or less stable. Mm-hmm. And the politics is repressive but predictable compared to all the chaos in the U.S. and then the disorientation, confusion in Europe. Mm-hmm. So the national narrative in China is actually no longer simple propaganda, because young people now, they, you know, they have access to all the information and they do read all kinds of what happened. I think that actually now does give the China a model, I would say, more legitimacy than at least 3 or 4 years ago. I mean, the COVID, there was a little, lots of critical views. Mm-hmm. Then you ask, okay, but you know, these young people work so hard, they don't see any improvement in their life, because now the economic slowdown and rising unemployment, and also their parents probably had a good life, but now also become stagnant the whole life. I mean, it is their everyday life. They cannot see the improvement. I mean, why should they still buy their kind of grand narrative? And for some people, for some young people, and this is precisely, they feel they need to identify themselves with the nation, with something grand. And this has something to do with loneliness, actually. Mm-hmm. Because this narrative, you have to work hard, therefore you have a good life. And this is, you know, the good thing to lead a life. This is, I mean, to be part of the competition, etc. This is all what they know when mm-hmm. they grow up. That's a starting point. Huh? That's all they know. It's deeply internalized. And now they come to a situation, yes, I have worked hard, but I have not received the reward that I was promised. Mm-hmm. So for many, many people do feel disillusioned, disappointed. That's certainly there. But then you also have a huge crisis in your mind. So how should I make sense of my being? Mm-hmm. I work hard, but there's no... If I continue working hard, I probably still don't see any benefit in my life. So then that is actually also a moment that you feel very lonely, because mm-hmm. you no longer know how you can connect yourself to the world in a meaningful way. No? Mm-hmm. You can see, you can survive. But the world does not give me response. You know, I'm really like shouting in an empty valley, but the valley even does not echo. Mm-hmm. That is a sense of loneliness.
Yeah.
And at that time, what do? You raise your head and to see the sun or not, or there's a star, or there's a cloud. You try to identify yourself to that. That is a kind of a psychology. May sound strange for people outside, but if you grow up, you know, as I said, the only thing you know is to be so committed, dedicated to the idea that you work hard, there will be benefit. Mm-hmm. And when that become cracking, and then you see, okay, China in the world is still doing decent job and it's still rising. And then you feel, okay, probably by identifying myself with something actually completely beyond my control, beyond my understanding even, is a way that I at least feel connected to this world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, and then what about on the flip side, right? So there's, you know, kind of identification with the nation, right? But there's also, at least there has been in the last few years, a kind of, I mean, I think the New York Times or other Western media described it almost as a countercultural narrative, which is lying flat.
Yes.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about it?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I said, this kind of the nationalistic sentiment, some people said the young people are very pessimistic about their own future, but very optimistic about the national future. Mm-hmm. Actually, they feel the national optimism can mm-hmm. compensate for the personal pessimism. So that is not for everybody. Actually, that is, I would say less than half of young people would feel that way. Actually, the majority actually are still on the pessimistic side and
really?
Do not really, you know, identify themselves to the sun or the and then this are the people who have been talking about lying flat.
Mm-hmm.
Lying flat is basically to say, okay, I don't want to work so hard, I want to quit. You know, it's very much actually resonates with the great resignation or quiet quit movement in the U.S. But here we have to qualify. When people talk about lying flat, we have to be aware of two things. Number one, there's lots of talk about lying flat. And how you do, how will you lie flat? How I do lie flat? I do lie flat last month because I went to, you know, Southwest China. I not working for 1 month or 2 months. But then afterwards, come back to Shanghai or Beijing to work hard again. So that's a lot of talk, lots of desire, lots of sentiment, expression, but not so much action. Mm-hmm. So it'll be mistaken to think, okay, lots of young people really stop working. No, that's not true. Number two, when they say they are doing lying flat, is not like they really cut off from the mainstream economy. Often they mean that, okay, you know, I used to work 12 hours a day in order to earn a salary, which is a minimum 20,000 a month. Mm-hmm. But now I lie flat. I was just happily to work 8 or 6 hours a day, accepting a job which offered me only 8,000 a month.
Yeah. It's like actually just being European, right? Like
Yeah. Oh no, yeah. They call European life flat. The life flat, the continent.
I mean, I would say I'm lying flat all the time. You know, I'm working right now, but like, is it really, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is it really working? But does the government... The government, my understanding, again, from these New York Times or Western media articles, is that the government has been concerned about this.
Yes.
And they're also concerned about AI as replacement for friends and especially romantic relationships,
yes,
which kind of relates to this idea of lying flat, especially for young women, right?
Yeah.
Because they're like, I can't be bothered to date these stupid boys. So I'm just going to lie flat and like text my AI boyfriend, right?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, so these two concerns, in a way, are contradictory to each other.
Right.
Because from the government point of view, okay, you should continue working hard and not lie flat. And at the same time, also actively engage in romantic relations because to form family, to give birth, mm-hmm, et cetera. And, I mean, most of people agree, the main reason that so many young people are not dating and losing interest in family life and romance is because they are really burned out,
mm-hmm,
the burnout. So actually, by and large, in the broader picture, I would say lying flat is good for bringing back love and romance. And we also have evidence to see that the people develop more friendship and romantic relations when they, you know, not so kind of in the trade mules all the time.
Yeah.
And then the question is, why government are so worried about this somehow apparently quite trivial matters? The thinking is like that, okay, if people lie flat, so who is going to build the economy? The Chinese economy, you know, achieved such a miraculous growth, as I mentioned, is because everyone kind of lived in a situation of suspension, you know,
mm-hmm,
you work very hard single-mindedly. And if people stop doing that, would the China model lose its the most important basis, which is a manpower contribution? That is a misperception because the Chinese economy has to change and has to move away from this labor-intensive model.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea to think, okay, you know, people have to work hard like before in order to sustain the growth, I think it is a result of the fact that they are imprisoned by older paradigm of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I think, if I can, I would persuade the government out of this way of thinking. Yeah, and then the worry about AI and the romance from government point of view is mainly the question of demographic crisis.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very sharp fall of fertility rate and marriage.
And this happened really quickly, right? Like,
so, yes,
you know,
yes.
Like there, you know, if you're my age, I'm 35, you still remember like the one child policy.
Yes.
Like people were obsessed with talking about this, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very sharp turn. And of course, we know that worldwide declining fertility is a common problem. But what really make Chinese case special is the speed.
Mm-hmm.
China was special before for two things. Number one is China is a nearly universal marriage society.
Mm-hmm.
The marriage rate is very high despite relatively high level of education and the participation of public work by women.
Mm-hmm.
Because in other societies, once women's education level increase, the marriage rate will go down.
Mm-hmm.
But China did not happen in China. But suddenly, universal, near universal marriage society experienced a very sharp decline of marriage rate, and there's a worry of overpopulation now turned to deep anxiety about the depopulation. So then the question is how to handle that? And I think the true, the question of the government has a point to say that if we become so dependent on AI for our emotional need, and then it will, of course, further exacerbate the problem, you know, isolation and automation of society, and then there will be less opportunities even to meet people. Yeah, so that part is a problem. But in my view, it's that the challenge of AI is not only in the domain of romantic relations, but more broadly, you know, the friendship. And there's a very fundamental sense that you are connected to the world in a meaningful way.
In the U.S., I just wrote this piece about AI boyfriends and AI intimacy. Yeah. So I was thinking a lot about this. And in a lot of the writing about these you know, apps, people kind of like very quickly explain the popularity by using this phrase, the loneliness epidemic, mm-hmm, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And yeah. And they treat it as kind of like an illness. And you know, in keeping with that metaphor, like my impulse is to say, well, no, loneliness is like a symptom of yes. something. It's not the like that's not yes. you know, you can't like cure it
yeah.
on its own. Maybe yes. you can treat its symptoms,
yes.
But
yes.
but I wonder, you know, if you know, is it even worth saying like what's the sickness? Like, is it capitalism? You know, like what you know, what is it?
So I mean, we know that loneliness is a bad. No, that's true. Because loneliness, yeah. by definition, is a sense of, because it's a first person feeling that there's something wrong, it's a suffering, it's a negative. No? And then also we have research demonstrated that, it's equivalent to the damage of smoking 15 cigarettes a day, mm-hmm. if you feel lonely. And it is have all kinds of health consequences. But then, is loneliness itself just an individual illness, like it's like smoking, you know, as if it is a behavior mm-hmm. that it can be corrected, right? Or it's simply because your lack of friends? I don't think so. I feel that, as I said earlier, so I mean, I completely agree with you. So the loneliness itself is a symptom of something else. No? Because the profound sense of loneliness comes from the lack of a meaningful connection with the world. Mm-hmm. And so this is very common. We go to a big party, we feel very lonely. And you go to a pub, go to a bar, you feel very lonely. And then you have so much, you know, people and very lively music and everything is there. But you don't see the point how I connect to the world, to the situation. That moment, mm-hmm. you feel very displaced, mm-hmm. very lonely. And if we miss somebody, we may feel lonely. Mm-hmm. But the profound loneliness is we have no one to miss. Mm-hmm. We don't miss anybody, right? You don't have anyone to miss because you don't see any concrete, meaningful point connect you to the world, mm-hmm. right? And then how, I mean, this situation is not individual behavior, is not individual emotional orientation or anything. It is created by the larger situation under which we work, we study, we're brought up, right? So that's related to what we said earlier. You know, I mean, of course, technology does play a role in it. And the second question about the relation, if we treat loneliness not only as a feeling or as a behavior question, but as a general situation, condition of being, of living, and what AI does, I think the biggest problem for me, AI, is creating what I call the numbness towards loneliness. Mm-hmm. Loneliness is bad, but it is also a part of life we cannot get rid of. Now, the problem is whether or not loneliness becomes severe and become chronic and all the time. And the loneliness has its own function too, because some psychologists have already compare loneliness to social hunger. Mm-hmm. You know, if you feel lonely, it's just like you feel hungry and you will reach out to make friends, etc. I would probably compare loneliness to pain. Mm-hmm. Pain is extremely important for our survival because we'll feel pain, we know there's something wrong. So the alarm mm-hmm. is a trigger, right? And if you don't feel pain, it is extremely dangerous for your well-being and even survival. And what does AI do? AI make you numb. Mm-hmm. You can no longer sense the pain. Even you are losing meaningful connection with the world, but you don't know. Mm-hmm. As if there's no such a thing. It does not bother you. Why? Because the emotional need can be so easily, instantly satisfied by AI. Your dopamine or your all this chemical in brain can be manipulated by this kind of interaction with AI. And then previously you feel the pain and you know something's wrong, you start reading or seeking counseling or do something. And now you feel very comfortable in the situation. There is no meaningful connection with the world. And then people say, oh, that's fine. Then you just live in a situation as if you know, you're constantly on the drug. But no. And what we witnessed today is that people still search meaning. But in that condition, the way they search meaning is often have very dangerous consequences. Mm-hmm. People become depression without very clear causes. Yeah. And that become very common. And then you suddenly people will believe in some, we think, completely bizarre, unbelievable conspiracy theory. Yeah. But for them, it makes a perfect sense.
You talk about the loss of the nearby, yes. right? So can you explain a little bit what that means?
Mm.
Yeah.
The loss of nearby, actually, first of all, is very visceral. I mean, you mentioned the language before, because all my work, I want to start with something when people see it, people immediately know what it means in their life. Mm-hmm. And then they'll put themselves in the picture mm-hmm. when they think. Disappearance of nearby basically means, you know, in big cities in China, everything is vertical. You know, your neighbor, most of the neighbors are not next to you. Most of the neighbors are up mm-hmm. higher level or lower level in the high-rise buildings, and the only moment you met your neighbor is in the lift. Mm-hmm. And in the lift, of course, you don't talk to anybody. You avoid eye contact. Mm-hmm. You look at your mobile phone, even though there's no connection with your mobile phone in the lift. And so you don't know who the neighbors are. You don't know who cleans the rubbish and who the person, the shop just immediately next to your condominium, who from where you buy breakfast every day, who they are, where they come from. Most of them are migrants, and how do they worry about their life and etc. You don't know how your life, everyday life, is constituted.
Mm-hmm. Do you know this? It's kind of an insult, like on Western social media, which is you tell someone to touch grass.
Oh,
do you know this?
No.
Yeah, well, it means basically go outside and literally touch grass, because you're spinning out, like either like about yourself or like about like the news on your phone, right?
Ah.
And you just tell, like, it's always said, like, it's never said nicely. It's kind of like you're doing this thing.
Okay.
But you know, it's pretty easy to get into this kind of like mode, which is like you're either like focused on yourself and your personal goals or like the news, right?
Yeah.
Because when you focus on the news, you kind of feel virtuous, like you're supposed to know about what's going on in the
yes.
world. If you don't know what's going on in the world, you're irresponsible, like,
yes.
you know, and this could also affect your economic standing,
yeah.
You know, the war. Are you personally guilty of this sometimes? Do you know how it feels to be like, I can't focus on the guy at the grocery store right now? Like,
mm-hmm.
I can't like make conversation with my neighbor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever do it? Or do you force yourself to constantly touch grass?
I try. But of course, it's not so literally, you know, you have to be force yourself to talk to anybody passing in front of your own on the street downstairs. So the idea is awareness and orientation. So I think the question is what can we do in the current situation?
Yeah, what do you
because
do?
So easily caught up in the situation that the nearby somehow seems just so boring and irrelevant to you. So I think for most of people, young people, especially in China, we have a term called the social phobia. You know, they just feel it's very burdensome and scary to talk to people. And if people have a social phobia, they cannot talk to have a kind of casual chat with anyone around them. And then just pay attention and start to think, okay, now I live here, and this is like in China condominium, 90% I think buildings in China were built after 1995. Mm-hmm. It's amazing a story. And then it's all very short history. I mean, who were here before? What is this land before? And then just pay attention. I mean, you receive some notification from the management of the condominium about how to manage water or rubbish or collect the fees. And just pay a little more attention how this all is organized. And if you heard someone quarreling on the street, also go out and watch to pay attention. And
so you're saying eavesdrop.
Yeah. No, it's very important. I mean, the one thing we are missing now is gossip.
Yeah.
I was the other day, I was thinking that question. Gossip is replaced by rumor. When we no longer have gossips, we have lots of rumors. Mm. And the gossip is extremely important because gossip is social. Mm-hmm. With the people we talk, gossip of something, actually is we give some evaluation about what's going on. Rumor is that we are messenger of someone else. Mm-hmm. You know, we just spread something, the conspiracy theory or whatever, already packaged. But anyway, so and the gossip is a very important part of the nearby. So to do what? To what effect? I think there's two effects here. Number one, if you pay more attention to the nearby and you understand how society and the social life is created, maintained, or constituted in a rather complex way, and you will be less likely to be so caught up by these abstract messages or certain ideological belief or emotion. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So you will be just the whole temperament will become more grounded. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that probably is the most important benefit. And then you will ideally, you will develop a kind of a more nearby perspective.
At the beginning of a conversation, you mentioned that loneliness used to be the purview of, like the upper classes, like artists, philosophers. Mm-hmm. It was almost like a luxury, right?
Yes.
To be able to like have time to feel lonely, to be alone,
yes.
Right? And that does suggest, and I think it's true, that there is a kind of solitude that is positive or generative.
Yeah.
And what do you think is the difference between loneliness and solitude, or, whatever words you want to use, like the good kind of loneliness and the bad kind of loneliness?
Oh, so that is, of course, has been discussed very widely in psychology and philosophy. And I think for me, the most interesting distinguishing and important distinguishing and the most relevant one today to today's situation is made by Hannah Arendt, right? And she said loneliness is not only different from solitude, it is opposite to solitude. And in everyday language, we would say, okay, solitude is, you're calm, be yourself, you're content, then you become reflexive and recharge your energy, right? Loneliness is you feel a bit of a suffering, depressed, unpleasant. You are yearning something, certain desires not being met. Mm. But the solitude moment is actually you're quite content or the desire being met. But that is a very psychological description. But Hannah Arendt, I think, made a more political interpretation. And it's very experiential, too. She said the worst thing of being lonely is that you can no longer be with yourself. So loneliness, why Hannah Arendt said the worst thing of loneliness is to make solitude impossible. Because now, as I said, you have no one to miss. You have no one to watch. And there is no world out there anymore. So therefore, you have no yourself. Yourself also evaporate. And at this moment, you cannot be with yourself. And why loneliness is socially and politically dangerous, the profound sense of loneliness, I mean, in addition to all this physical health conditions you mentioned, is because when you cannot be with yourself, you may instrumentalize yourself and instrumentalize others in a quite extreme way. You don't see yourself, you don't see other persons as human anymore. No? So you can take kind of quite extreme ideology or can take up quite extreme actions. So the bottom line, and again, it's Hannah Arendt idea, the common sense, a very basic common sense, make you and I as a human who can live together, that may go away.
Mm-hmm. Some of your researchers published an article in Berlin Review about lonely deaths, people who are dying alone. And and I was wondering, there's some, you know, there's something about this topic that makes everyone kind of like immediately have an emotional reaction, mm-hmm. right? But you want to... In the Western context, you know, dying alone is like maybe like the like it's kind of used as an extreme example, right? Like I wouldn't want to die, you know, I don't want to die alone. When women are getting a little bit older, people are like, you know, men too. Like when people are getting older and they're single and they're like, I'm going to die alone. You know, nothing's gonna happen to me. And I wonder if your research on this has kind of changed how you look at it or changed how you look at loneliness in general, changed how you think about the consequences of loneliness. Do you think that maybe lonely deaths will become more common?
Okay, great. First of all, I'm very pleased to have this opportunity to publish the piece in Berlin Review. And I must emphasize that the paper is based on research done by Mika, Elena, and Annika. I'm just a junior partner of the writing, and that was a very enjoyable experience writing together. And first of all, you know, you said that loneliness is something people immediately feel, feel quite extreme misfortune in life. I mean, certainly it's not only in the West. I would say in many other parts of the world, especially in Asia, you know, loneliness has used to have a very strong stigma. It's very bad. You must avoid at any cost. First of all, I'm afraid to say that dying alone, what we talk about dying alone is not like, you know, the moment when you die, nobody around you. The lonely deaths that we mentioned in the article refer to the phenomenon that a person died without anyone's notice, and which situation lasts at least 8 days or more.
Okay.
And in many cases, of course, it goes months or years. So that kind of is quite a serious version of, mm-hmm. of lonely deaths. So the one point we made in that article is that then how public perception about loneliness, living alone and dying alone changed in Germany and in Japan. And we found actually one thing that make a huge difference in these two societies in terms of how perception change is how you talk about the care work, clean up, the scene of lonely death.
Mm-hmm.
Because I said, you know, it takes at least 1 week for someone to discover according to our condition. And at that time, bodies start decay already. Mm-hmm. And then you create a smell and a liquid and, you know, the whole apartment. And who is going to come to clean up all the things? And in Japan, you also have all the kind of, because they have very strict regulation about what kind of thing you can dispose where and et cetera. Mm-hmm. So someone have to come to go through all the items left behind. And this, since many of this person who died alone have no relatives, so do you, you know, organize some ritual for mourning and et cetera. So the care workers do lots of this work.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out that actually many care workers found it is quite, has a very strong positive aspect in their labor, mm-hmm. their work, because then going through all the items, they understand a new person,
mm-hmm.
and they feel connected to them, and they perform lots of rituals for that person to say goodbye and et cetera, even though it's completely a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
So in Germany, this type of care workers is presented quite differently. Is presented as a action of cleaning up a crime scene. Is somehow related to the image of crime.
Right.
Even though, contort. I mean, it's have nothing to do with crime. I mean, just lonely deaths, even not a suicide. So then it's kind of have a very different perception in as a result of this different type of narrative about the care work. So the main point, and I'll come back to all what we discussed, mm-hmm. The loneliness, connection, and the nearby. To overcome this loneliness pandemic, especially this profound sense of loneliness, the feeling being denied by the world, this kind of paying attention to concrete effort, like the care workers, you see the connection, no matter how small it is, actually can have a very positive effect in the public perception.
That was Lauren Euler speaking with Biao Xiang. Berlin Review recently published an essay that Biao co-authored on lonely deaths in Berlin and Tokyo and the care workers who clean up. You can read the essay Dying Alone at blnreview.de or in our reader number 7, which will be published in late June. There's also a link in the show notes. If you like Airlift, please consider subscribing to Berlin Review. Our essays, criticism, and fiction from around the world start at just €5 a month. Airlift is recorded in the studio of Jacobin Germany. This episode was edited by Caitlin Roberts with Najla Said. I'm Tobias Haberkorn, editor of Berlin Review. See you next time.